Robot robbers.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've been talking about artificial intelligence for a couple of weeks. The first week we talked about the Psak machine, the idea of having an artificial intelligence learning Torah, teaching Torah, and paskening. That we talked about that idea. Last time that we met, don't even know when it was, we talked about... Yeah, that sounds right. We talked about the future of autonomous cars, of self-driving cars, and what it might mean, and we're going to continue that discussion tonight. The previous time, we mainly focused on decision-making on the part of the car, and we actually talked about the trolley problem, which is a famous philosophical problem where you have to make a decision between, if you stay on your current course, you'll kill one person, and if you stay on your current course, you'll kill five people, and if you switch, then you'll only kill one person. So what's the right thing to do? What's the right thing to do in Judaism in general? And we discussed whether or not, I don't think we really got into it deeply, but there is somewhat of a discussion whether or not it really matters what the halacha says, because if you're programming the car, so you're kind of doing it outside of the context of the actual event, meaning if you were right now in the car trying to make a decision, so then yes, halacha might inform what you should do. But it might be that the decision might change if you're programming the car from beforehand and just telling the car, kill fewer people. That's different than if you're actually in the situation where you're doing it, but that's what we discussed last time. We talked about morality and the morality of it, and what the halacha, if I remember correctly, the decision that we came to, based on the Chazon Ish, was that there is room to have the car shift and make a decision to kill fewer people, because even though you are killing innocent people, so to speak, you're killing people that would have survived otherwise, nevertheless, it's not considered an act of ritzicha, because what you're really trying to do is to save people. That's what the Chazon Ish had, that language. He said, if there's if somebody shoots an arrow at one person, and then it could be deflected and kill other people, but fewer people. If he was going to kill a few people, then it could be deflected to kill fewer people. So then that's not considered an act of ritzicha, even though you're killing someone, because what you're really trying to do is to save someone. So, okay, but that was what we discussed last time. This time, shift gears, same subject, really. I called it robot robbers, but we could shift back to the car issue. And what I'm interested here is actually liability. We talked before about killing and saving and those situations and what you should do. Here, we're kind of after the fact. What happens after something occurs? So I actually put a source over here that somebody recently used artificial intelligence for a voice crime. What that was is actually they used an artificial intelligence to make a voice. I don't know if it's in everybody else's news feeds. I know in my Google news feed, a lot has been showing up on what's called deep fake. Have you guys heard of this? Anybody read it? So apparently I care about this, so my phone is telling me about it. You can go online. You can go on YouTube and do deep fake.
You decided what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, deep fake, which is kind of what we're talking about, I guess. Deep fake, if you YouTube that, so what you'll find is that all these situations where they basically take, the most prominent examples, they take a famous person. I watched a video of Keanu Reeves, okay? I watched a video of Keanu Reeves beating up a grocery store robber, except in real life, like not in a movie, except it wasn't Keanu Reeves, and it was fake, but basically they had managed to put Keanu Reeves' face on a body that was basically his same body type, so convincingly that it really looked like Keanu Reeves, like it really looked like him. So they did that successfully. So this robbery that it's talking about over here is they did that to somebody's voice. They successfully mimicked, like, let's say, I don't remember, I read the article a while ago, but let's say they took a bank employee, a high-ranking bank employee, they took his voice, and they managed to use a computer to get that voice to say something like, transfer money to this bank account. So they managed to do that. So let's say that was totally automated. In other words, they wrote a computer program, told the program what to do, what to say, and then the program actually went out and said it. Who's liable in those kinds of situations? It sounds obvious, mm-hmm. right? But it's not so obvious. Here's another example. Let's say I program a robot, and let's say I program the robot and I actually tell it, go out and rob a bank. And the robot knows how to rob the bank. It knows it carries a weapon with it, goes out and robs the bank and brings me the money. Or it goes out and let's say I tell it to assassinate someone. It goes out and it kills somebody and because I told it to do it. Am I liable for those situations? Sounds obvious, doesn't it? All right, let's make it less obvious, even though I don't think even that's obvious. Let's make it less obvious. Let's say I went out, I programmed my robot, and I told it as an artificial intelligence, I said, money is good. Now, I want my robot to do is, I want him to go find gainful employment, become a tailor or a computer programmer or something, go get a good job. But instead, my robot decides it's worth more, it's more cost efficient to rob banks. Right? So he goes out and he robs a bank. Now, I didn't tell the robot to do that. I just told him to make money. I didn't know what he was going to do.
It would behoove you to return the money to the bank afterwards.
Okay. But let's say on the way he damaged something. Let's say on the way he damaged the car. Do I have to pay for the car?
The question is whether the robot is considered to be an autonomous moral being or not.
Is that the only... if it was... let's say we assume it's not.
It's your cow.
I was about to say that. Yes, go ahead.
No, you say it.
Go ahead.
Maybe it sounds smarter coming from you.
No. Go ahead. You were reading my mind. Go ahead.
So you want to say, Jake, you want to say that it's because it's my property, therefore I'm liable for it. Similar to the way that if my cow goes out and gores somebody or causes damage, then I'm liable for that as well. All right?
If my shore goes and tramples somebody's crops, for
good.
Example.
So because I want to get back to
that,
I'm going to tweak the situation because I don't want to talk about that yet. I want to tweak the situation. Let's say it's your robot and I'm the one who programmed it. Let's say you brought the robot to me and said, listen, I want to make some money. Can you program my robot to make me some money? So I write the program because, you know, I know how to write programs and you don't. And I write the program and then the robot goes out and does it. Who's liable, me or you?
You.
Or any of us.
Sounds like you.
Still going to be Jake?
No, you're liable because
Jake didn't do anything. Jake has nothing to do with it.
It's still his. It's
according to the contract you have between you and him. Like, I decline any responsibility of it.
If you have a contract, then fine. But let's say there's no contract. And by the way, what if I actually program it to go rob a bank? I take Jake's robot. He unknowingly gave me his robot. I have sinister motives. I don't tell it to go make money. I tell it to go rob a bank. Meaning, it's not my property. But I told the robot to go rob a bank.
And bring the money to whom?
Jake. Doesn't matter. It did damage on the way. I'm not even... of course he's going to have to give back the money. It's not his money. But it did damage on the way. I'm more interested in the damage.
Don't you have any examples of that in Gemara where you're responsible for that and you have to return it? You're responsible for it.
He gave it to me. I programmed it in. I gave it back to him. It left his house.
Yeah, we didn't give it to you for the purpose of doing that. You've taken a...
Fine. You're right. Yeah, so?
Therefore, you're responsible for it.
So I'm responsible because I programmed the robot and it robbed the bank.
So you got it, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's start. So I want to break it down into two issues over here. One is an issue of liability because of, I guess, what we'll call causation, which is we intuitively think that if I cause damage, then of course I'm going to be liable for it, right? And it doesn't matter whether it's mine or whether it's not mine, my object, right? If I'm the causer of the damage, so then I'm going to be liable for it. That's one thing. But as Jake points out, there's another thing, which is that even if I don't cause the damage, if the damage is caused by my property, then I'm also liable for that. Nothing to do with whether or not I caused it. If my bull gores somebody, and I was in a different country at the time, am I the cause of that? No, I'm not the cause of that. But because it's my property, I'm responsible. It's a quirk in the way that property works. Okay? But I want to talk first about the first issue. So let's talk about causation. So some of this will probably be familiar to all of you. But maybe some of the implementations will be surprising. Grama and Garmi. Okay. Bava Kama. The Gemara and Bava Kama. Daf Samach Amar Aleph. Our rabbis taught. Where he fanned it along with the wind, which also fanned it. If there was enough force in his blowing to set the fire ablaze, he would be liable. But if not, he would be exempt. Okay? This is talking about a case where a person started a fire. Right? And he fanned the fire. And then the wind also fanned the fire. So now, the Gemara says that if there was enough force in his blowing, if my fanning of the fire was enough to cause the fire alone, then I would be liable. But if not, if I needed the wind to come by and carry the fire along, then I would not be liable. I would be exempt. But why should not be liable? As in the case of one winnowing on Shabbos, which was liable through the wind, though the wind was helping him. What malacha is this on Shabbos? No. It's not Zoreya, it's Zoreh. Zoreh. Zayin Vav Resh Hay is when the farmer takes the wheat, he throws it up in the air, and the wind comes and blows away the chaff. No, the wind comes and blows away the good stuff, and all the bad stuff falls down. I think I'm getting that right. It's the rocks that fall down, right? It's the rocks that fall down, the good stuff blows away. And that's what would happen, right? Pretty sure I'm right. So the good, I think it's the good stuff. It doesn't matter. The point is that the wind comes and does the winnowing for him, which means that you're chayav for a malacha on Shabbos, even though it's a combination of you and the wind. So it sounds like that's considered your act, though. That whole act is considered yours. So how is that different than me starting a fire, blowing on the fire, and the wind also coming by and helping out? Why is it different? The Gemara wants to know. Abaye thereupon said, we are dealing here with a case where he blew it up in one direction, and the wind blew it up in a different direction. No, because we're talking about a case where you throw it up, and the wind comes and does it that way. In other words, the wind is doing all the work. You're not doing any of the work. You threw it up, and then if it was just you, it would just come straight back down. But the wind here is going that way, whereas in the case of the other case, it's you and the wind working together to spread the fire. That's what Abaye wants to suggest. Rava says, no, this case is one where he started to blow it up when the wind was only normal and would have been unable to set it ablaze, but there suddenly came on an unusual wind which made it blaze up. So Rava says something, Rava wants to tweak the case of the fire. He wants to say that where you started to blow it, you started to blow on the fire when the wind was normal and it would have been unable to do anything. And then the wind came by and it was a ruach, what's it called? A ruach she'ena mitsuya. It was an unusual wind. So Rava just made a very, very important, what's called an ukimta, which is basically an assumption in the case. The assumption he's making in the case is that this wind that we're talking about, this is like, I wouldn't say it's a hurricane wind, but it's an unseasonable wind. Right? It's an unseasonal wind that came out of nowhere. You had no reason to expect it. But if it would be a regular wind, if it was a normal November day, right? Not in Ranana, but not in Chicago quite, but in, I don't know, New York. Thank you very much, David. In New York, where it's kind of windy in November, and you can trust that the wind will come and take the fire, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be chayav for that, because it was there when you started, and it's part of your act. That's what Rava seems to be assuming. Rav Zera said the case is one where he merely increased the heat by breathing heavily on it. Okay, let's ignore Rav Zera for now. Rav Ashi said, when we say that there is liability for winnowing where the wind is helping, this applies to Shabbos where the Torah prohibited any work with a definite object, whereas here, regarding damages, such an act would be considered merely as a secondary cause, and a mere secondary cause in the case of damage carries no liability. And this is going to be the final answer that we're going to focus on. What does Rav Ashi say? So if this was in Hebrew, it would be much easier, actually. This is one of the cases where I think if it was in Hebrew or Aramaic, a light would be going off right away. You'd know what it's talking about. But because it's written in English, it's actually harder to read. This is Grama. Gemara says, no, the reason why this works like this is because Grama on Shabbos, the Gemara wants to say over here, which is problematic, Grama on Shabbos is Chayav, right? Or at least it's Usser, applies to Shabbos where the Torah prohibited any work with a definite object. Whereas here, regarding damage, this act is only Grama, and this is going to be Patur. Grama, you're not chayav for damages. You're not chayav for nezek when the nezek is caused indirectly, which means where there is another koach. It's koach me'urav, koach acher me'urav vo, where there's another koach that gets involved as well, which means even if it is a ruach mitsuya, even if it is a normal wind, you're not going to be chayav.
Trying to think of another example where you'd have a grama in the zikin.
Most cases, Fang.
Besides this case of the fire, what's another example of grama when it comes to the zikin?
Well, maybe the case we're talking about right now. What's another case of grama in the zikin?
Put your hay and it catches light in the market and someone's fire.
No, because that might not. Well, as long as the fire is acting as it normally does, then that's not going to be grama. In other words, if the fire goes from one place to another without any help from any wind or anything, that's not grama. That's fire. You started that fire. You're chayav. It's indirect. There was nothing.
I was someone walking by and it was there.
Ah, I see.
That's a whole Hanukkah story.
Right, you're right. That's the only place in where the Mishnah actually mentions Hanukkah. That case is where a guy lit a Hanukkah candle outside of his market, his store, and somebody walked by, and you're pater because you're lighting a Hanukkah candle. Otherwise, you'd be chayiv. You'd be chayiv because there's no grama there. You started a fire in a public place. What other cases of grama? There's tons of cases of grama. Another case of grama. This is kind of a weird case. This is actually called koach sheni, maybe, but it's similar. Where let's say you open the water spout, so the first burst of water that comes out of there, you're going to be chayiv for. But after that, after your kind of initial opening goes away, so anything else that happens, you're going to be pater from. Another case: you tie down an animal, at night. In a place where once the sun comes up, the animal is going to be killed. It's going to be dehydrated in an hour because it's so hot over there. Another case of grama because it's separated in time. There's tons of cases. Most cases are actually grama when you start to really think about it. Maybe not most, but a lot of them are. Let's see how the Shulchan Aruch categories is this. Echad hevia ta'or v'echad hevia ta'etzim. Let's say two people start the fire, right? Two people start the fire. So one of them brought the fire, and one of them actually brought more fuel. Maybe it's always burning. What? It's always burning. Maybe it's eitzim chayav. Where did it go? Maybe it's eitzim chayav. So if it continues to burn, so the one who's chayav is the one who brings the fuel, because he's the one that allows it to continue. And that's in the case where the fire was brought first, and then the Eitzim were brought next. Right. If it goes in that order, the fire is going to be chayav. If another person comes and he fans that flame, whoever goes last, basically, is chayav. The one who's closest to the damage. Chayav. Libto ruach she'ena mitzuya, tamid arei kulam p'turim. If there's a ruach she'ena mitzuya, everybody's going to be patur. If it's a ruach metzuya, you're going to be chayav. And if there was a ruach she'ena metzuya when you started your act, then you are going to be chayav. So here the Shulchan Aruch paskins that ruach metzuya you are chayav for. Okay, the Rama says, "V'yesh omrim the ena malabe chayav ela kasheyesh belibui shalo kedei lelabot." Ve'ein baruach levad kedei lelavot. Aval ein b'kol achad kedei lelavot, o sheyesh b'kol achad kedei lelavot, patur. It says, you're only going to be chayav if you provide it enough for it to happen on its own. That's pretty much what we saw in the Gemara. If you provided enough for it to happen on its own. Ve'esh omrim duhu adin im shnayim libo, ve'ein b'kol achad kedei lelavot, p'turin. If two of them did the kindling of the fanning of the flame, and there's not enough in each one of them. This is similar to Shnayim Shasu on Shabbos, where two people do something that really only takes one person to do. So also, you're patur. You have to be solely responsible for something.
We just read that two people fan the flame together, which spreads the flame and causes damage. The two of them are both patur. Is that what we just read?
The last part?
Yes.
If two of them fan the flame together, and enough of, and one of them would have been enough, so then they're both patur. Yeah, similar to on Shabbos when they're both patur if they did a melacha like that. Okay, now where do we go with this? So on the one hand, what it means is that grama is patur. So two things to say about this. Number one, even though it's patur, everybody agrees it's asur. Right? Nobody thinks that. Okay, great, I found the way out. I can do anything with this, right? I can start fires over here and then wait until they get all the way over there and I'll be fine. You may not be liable in court. The court can't find you liable because it doesn't reach the level of chayav beit din. Nevertheless, what you did was asur, and don't worry, you'll pay for it one way or another at some point. And also, it also means that even though the court can't hold you liable, you are chayav bedinei shamayim, which means that you really should pay it back. But it's up to you. It's up to you to pay it back. Nobody can make you. What does this mean for our robot? What does this mean for our robot? Well, let's take the easy case first. I just own the robot. I didn't program it. All I did was maybe I programmed it. I said, listen, make money for me. Is that in any way directly caused by me? Well, I think we can safely say that that case is not directly caused by me. I didn't even intend for it to happen. I didn't think about it. The robot thought of it on its own. The artificial intelligence came up with this idea on its own. You know, whether or not it has a soul or anything like that, in a certain degree, it's autonomous. I didn't tell it to do it. What if I actually programmed it? I said, here, I want you to go to the bank and do this and do that and do this and do that, and then press the button, and it went.
If you programmed it, it sounds like the person who's fanning the flame.
Is it?
Sounds like it. You're for the first the damage.
Time. Everybody thinks so?
I'm not quite sure where the grammar would come into that, though.
Because well, what is grammar? There are many, many different definitions of grammar. All right? One of the more popular definitions of grammar is a delay in time, which means to say that the final act that we're interested in doesn't occur for a long time.
Like the grammar light switch on Shabbos.
Exactly, right? We use, or like a Shabbos timer on Yontif, right? On Yontif, on Shabbos, grammar is patur aval asur, right? You're not chayev midaraisa, but it's asur, lagamre. That's why when you have a Shabbos timer on Shabbos, let's say you wanted to, the light to go on 15 minutes, in 15 minutes, you can't just start flicking the switches, not to make it go on right now, chas v'shalom, but maybe I want it to go on in 15 minutes, so I'll flick the ticker so that it goes on 15 minutes. Can I do that?
No.
No. But what about if it's Yontif? Can I do it?
It's come on earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The answer is yes. It surprises many people. But you can 100% on Yontif go over to the Shabbos timer and cause the light to go on earlier than it was going to. You can't make it go off earlier. It's a different situation. But to make it go on earlier, you're absolutely allowed to do that. But you're not allowed to make it go on right now. You can't just flick the switch, just like you can't flick the switch. But grama on Yom Tov is mutar. So I'm allowed to do that on Yontif. Now, why is it grama though? Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't think it was grama, but almost everybody else thinks that it is grama. Why do you think it's grama? Why is that grama?
He's already turned it on. Anyway, he's going to turn it off.
Right.
I just delay the time.
Well, in this case, I'm actually bringing it forward. It wasn't going to go on in 15 minutes. It was going to go on in an hour. But I want the light on now.
Because the action they're doing now is going to cause something later to happen.
Good. So the time delay is the difference, right?
But
what's the counter argument to that?
Who's going to go
is it really grandma? After all, there's a timer. It's moving. Like anyway. It's going. No, forget about the fact that it's going to go on again later anyways. What I mean is, it's a natural process that's going to happen right now. It's not like, if it's similar to anything, it's similar, I guess, to a Ruach Metzuyah, but even more than that, it's just time. Time is the only thing that's preventing it from going on, right? But nevertheless, we seem to take it for granted that that is considered grama. Soma takes it for granted. Almost everybody takes it for granted. That's considered grama. It's enough that it is delayed by time to make it actually considered grama. If I program a robot and I tell it, listen, go to the bank. It doesn't go to the bank. It doesn't do anything until it gets to the bank. Isn't that considered a time delay enough that it breaks from actually my direct action? Is it really my direct action that causes the robot to rob the bank? If time is a factor, though, in directicity, is it?
It's time in terms of...
I told you before that if I tied down an animal, right, and then the sun came up and burned the animal or dehydrated the animal, that's grama. Is this any less?
Yes, because here it doesn't really make a difference where how much time elapsed, because your initial action, it's all part of the same program. Your action is what happened now. You've caused it to go and do something. It may have 10 different steps before it actually goes.
Yes, but the avera doesn't occur, or the damage doesn't occur until much later.
Can I get back to the analogy with the billowing of the flames? If I'm building a flame right now, and the flame spreads, and in 15 minutes later,
right,
the flame continues to spread,
right,
and does damage to a building 200 meters away.
Right.
Is that Brahma, or have I caused that?
Right. No. So that's a great question. So over there, it could be that because it's doing damage the whole time, right? It's the whole time it's doing the damage.
Yes.
It's doing the same process. It never changes. It's doing the same thing the whole time. So it's just one long act. Whereas maybe with the robot, the robot doesn't do what it does. Now, if that, we may be open to saying that, okay, if I program the robot from directly outside the bank and then send it in and it does it within like a minute, let's say, there, I think there's a lot more reason to say that there's no grumma here because it went in right then and there. There's not really any delay. It went and it did it right now. Whereas if I said, okay, put on a time delay, let's say, do it tomorrow. So then there's a lot of reason to say that that's grumma.
If instead of the robo, I have a person, I'm telling him to go to kill someone.
Right.
Is only right. Him to be...
So it's the same issue. Grumma with regards to killing is more similar to Nizikin. Is even more because it's even more patur, meaning you're more likely to be patur with nefashot than you are from a nezikin. In every sphere of halacha, I'm going to turn on the air. Is that right? Where is it? In every sphere of halacha, grama is actually evaluated differently. We already saw that on Shabbos is a little bit different than it is on Yontif, and it's a little bit different than it is for nezikin, and it's a little bit different than it is for nefashot. It's different in every case. But I wrote at the top here, grama and garmi. Okay? Now, by the way, everything that I'm saying right now, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is like, a full third of Shas or something like that, deals with exactly these kinds of issues. And there's no way that we're going to be able to cover them in this short amount of time, and I'm not the person to do it. I'm just trying to give us a taste, a little bit of how the discussion might go. So the next part of this discussion becomes garmi. Now, what is garmi? Most of you probably never heard of garmi. Yeah? You listen to Rabbi Rasner, so you've heard of Garmi. So Dina de Garmi.
The damager and the damagee.
No, that's the
case. If you got a better case, so.
Mazik and the Nizak.
Yes.
Right. No. So Garmi is something else. Garmi really only shows up in one place, only one place in Shas, as far as I know, and it's here in Bava Kamma on Kuf Amud Aleph. So here's the story. Reish Lakish showed a dinar to Rabbi Lazar. What?
It comes up quite a lot.
Well, I mean, the idea of it comes up, yeah. Reish Lakish showed a dinar to Rabbi Lazar, who told him that it was good. Rabbi Lazar was considered an expert in coinage. So Reish Lakish brought the dinar to Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Lazar says, okay, this is a good dinar. He said to him, you see that I rely upon you. I'm relying on you. He replied, meaning Rabbi Lazar replied, suppose you do rely on me. Rabbi Lazar is saying, what are you trying to say? Do you think that if it was found out, I would have to exchange it for a good one? In other words, Reish Lakish brought this to Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar said it was good. Reish Lakish said, okay, good, I'm trusting you on this, implying that if it turns out that it's no good, I want you to pay me back, or at least I'm going to hold you somewhat liable. And Rabbi Lazar says, you can't hold me liable. Did you not yourself state that it was only Rabbi Meir who adjudicates liability in an action for damage done indirectly, which apparently means that it was only Rabbi Meir who maintained so, whereas we did not hold in accordance with this view? Rabbi Meir... Hol is da'in dina de garme. That's what the Gemara says. He's da'in dina de garme. Now, you see, again, if you only have the English, it sounds like it says that Rabbi Meir holds that grama is chayav. But that's not what it says. It says he's da'in dina de garme. Dina de garme is a special, special case of grama. Meaning it's an indirect case, but something makes it different from most other gramas. It's in some way more liable. But nevertheless, what Reish Lakish says over here is, you said that Rabbi Meir is the one who would say I'd be chayiv in this case, but we don't all like Rabbi Meir. Fine. So the Gemara says, but he said to him, no, Rabbi Meir maintains so, and we do hold with him. So that's why Reish Lakish said, no, we do pass like Rabbi Meir. So over here, so far Reish Lakish is saying, we pass like Rabbi Meir, that we are dayin dina de garme. Don't worry, we'll have time to explain that. But to what statement of Rever was the reference? So what are we talking about when we talk about Dina de Garmi? The Gemara at this point offers three different possibilities, rejects each one, and settles on the fourth one, which is the only one that I put on the page. If the fence of a vineyard near a field of crops is broken through, The owner of the crops may request the owner of the vineyard to repair it. So you have two different properties that are adjacent one to the other. And there's a fence that separates them. One is a vineyard, and the other is a field of crops. What's the problem? Why do you need the fence?
Don't need the property.
Well, is it for damage purposes? Kilayim. The purpose is for kilayim. The wall is needed to separate them so that the two crops don't intermingle with each other and cause a problem of kilayim. It's not a problem of stealing or anything like that. It's a problem of kilayim. So, if it breaks, so the owner of the crops may request the owner of the vineyard to repair it. So also, if it is broken through again, he may similarly request him to repair it. So he is able to repeatedly request him to repair it, and the owner of the vineyard must repair it each time. But if the owner of the vineyard abandons it altogether and does not repair it, he would render the produce proscribed and would incur full responsibility. What would happen if he doesn't rebuild the wall? What would happen? They would mingle, and what would happen to the crops?
They were awesome.
They'd become infected with the grapes or the vineyard, whatever he's growing in the vineyard. They'd become usser, and we would hold the owner of the vineyard liable for the damages. This is considered dina de garme, because it is somewhat indirect, right? He didn't do anything. He just didn't rebuild the wall. And then his stuff went in and caused that damage.
He failed to act.
Exactly.
Is that the definition of dina de garme?
Well, we're not sure yet.
Failed to act.
We're not sure yet. That's the only example the Gemara gives
us.
Damage
was caused by a failure, by an act of omission rather than...
I don't think it's fair to say that that's the only characterization of dina de garme, although that is what we see in this case. So let's see first what the Shulchan Aruch says. We'll look at a shach, and then I have some English to explain everything. So the Shulchan Aruch says, "Kaimalan Rabbi Meir de dain dina de garme." This is just to show you that the Shulchan Aruch says we are dain dina de garme. We pass like Rabbi Meir. Now, in the parentheses, it says, "Davka ba'adam chayav dina de garme, but behema lekuli alma pater." We will only say this for a person when a person does something that would be dina de garme, but not when an animal does it. Fine.
Can I get back? Excuse me for a minute.
Yeah.
Go back one paragraph up. If you hold by Rav Meir, that means that in the case where he asked if the dinner is good,
right,
and he said the dinner is good,
exactly,
and he went to buy something, it turned out the dinner was a good one, he can go back and say, "Hey,
perfect,
you owe me a dinner."
That's right. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly. No, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah, because he was probably taking this dinner from somebody else and paying for it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's exactly the point. So, exactly what the Shulchan Aruch says in the next line: the fichach. Hadochef matbea shel chavero. No, actually it's not. But okay, I saw the word matbea and I thought it was the same thing. It's not. Hadochef matbea shel chavero ad sheyarad layam. Chayav, if you knock a coin out of somebody's hand and then it, you know, travels, it bounces until it goes into the water and gets lost forever. Afal pi shelo higbio. Now you took it out of his hands and threw it away. Vechena pochet matbea shel chavero vehevir tzuato chayav. Or if you damage the coin of your friend, okay, so that it couldn't be used anymore. You didn't throw it away. You didn't do anything to. You didn't, you know, get rid of it. Don't know what that is. I think it's some kind of field, and then you caused it to become sick. All these cases are cases of not normal cases of damage. You wouldn't normally expect them to rise to the level of damage, but because of dina de garme, the person is chayav. Now, all the Rishonim and the Acharonim try to figure out what is the common thread between all of these cases. So actually, you know what? Let's jump to the English on the second side of the page. This is an article that I found written, and it gives three different opinions. Number one, the liability of garmi applies when the damage is perpetrated by the person himself, albeit in an indirect manner. The grum exemption refers to cases where the damage is not done by the person himself. Okay, so this is a very simple one, mentioned by the Rishonim, that says that the difference between garmi and grumma is whether or not you yourself did something. If you did it, it's garmi. If somebody else did it, or something else did it, then it's grumma. Right. It's hard to exactly understand.
What's the difference? What's the mafkamina with
its garmi? If you did it, it's garmi. It's close enough to you that whatever case it is, it's close enough to you that you're going to be liable. Oh, what's the difference in halacha? You're going to be liable.
Garmi is liable.
Yeah. Okay. That's number one. Number two, garmi applies if the damage occurs simultaneously with that causative action, while grumma applies when there is a time delay. So, in other words, imagine Garmi being something indirect but simultaneous, whereas Grama is indirect and time delay. That one's simple enough. But the last one is what we're going to spend the most time on. Garmi is a rabbinic fine which the sages imposed for cases which occur frequently to ensure that people should not abuse the exemption for indirect damages to damage one another. What does that mean? That means that there is no essential difference between Garmi and Grama. There is no essential difference. You can look through all the cases and you will not find a physical, technical, essential reason why one case would be called Garmi and another case would be called Grama.
One is Midoraita and one is
No, they're
fine.
So. They're all Pater Midoraita. They're all Pater Midoraita. There's no fundamental difference between Garmi and Grama. Why is something sometimes called the Garmi and sometimes it's called the Grama?
It's on the individual.
It depends on the context of the offense. If Chazal saw that it was the kind of act that could be abused by people, that it would become commonplace, oh, I'm just going to do this and I'll be putter because it's Grama, then they enacted a fine to prevent people from taking advantage. Not a different category at all. It was cases where Chazal said, this is to the detriment of society. People are going to take advantage of Grama. So we need to come up with certain cases where we say, even though it's Grama, you're Chayev anyways. Places where people will not be careful. So who says this? So take a look at the Shach at the top. The Shach at the top says, the Ramban wrote an entire kuntras, an entire long essay on Dina de Garmi. Very long. And the Shach wrote, I started to write a whole commentary on his Dina de Garmi. But then I noticed that his whole assumption is, Shesover de Dina de Garmi daraitahu. He assumes, the Ramban assumes that Dina Degarmi is something that's Doraita. And therefore he came up with all kinds of explanations why some actions were considered Grama and some actions were considered Dina Degarmi. There shouldn't be any contradictions. But because I think that it's really just a Knas. Ein sarich lechalek b'shum chilukim. Therefore, there is no need to go into all these pupulim to try to find the difference between them. K'mo shekotav shara poskim shachachamim katzu b'davar sha'en nirah lahem shehu shchiach v'ragil. When they saw that something was shchiach v'ragil, what's shchiach v'ragil? What's shchiach?
Common.
Shchiach means it's common. V'ragil also means it's common. Shchiach is Aramaic. V'ragil is Hebrew. It means that it was commonplace for people to do this. Therefore, I pulled back. I stopped writing my commentary in the Ramban's Dina de Garmi. But nevertheless, I decided I would insert the comments of the Ramban as I'm explaining the Shulchan Aruch. And he basically says, I'm not going to write so much. And then he goes on to write a ton. All right? I put in a little bit over here, but he writes a lot. So the Shach is the one who says this last point. Who else says this last point? Actually, the Rama himself. So we look in the next Choshen Mishpat over here. This is the Shulchan Aruch. He says, "V'chein azorek kli shalom mirosh hagag v'ayu tachtav karim v'kistot." Imagine a person throws an object from a roof, and on the ground, right? A person threw a laptop from a roof, and on the ground there were all these pillows and mattresses, such that the laptop was going to be fine. So somebody pulled away all the mattresses. Who's going to be chayav? The guy who threw the laptop or the guy who pulled away the mattresses? So who's chayav? The guy who took away the mattresses. Even though he didn't even do anything, right? Well, he didn't do anything to the laptop. The laptop was thrown by someone else. All he did was take away the thing that was going to save the laptop.
Does it depend on when he pulled away the mattresses? I mean, before
he must have pulled them away after it was thrown.
While it was in the air.
After it was thrown. Because what seems to be going on is whoever did the last thing. Well, it's a little more complicated than that in this case because the first guy. What he did, if everything stayed the same, nothing would have happened. It would have been fine.
Isn't there a difference between the example of Shoshana just where you're not in control of the animal, here where you drop it and you're not in control of it happens, and the example of the robot where from the outset you've dictated to it what it needs to do? So you've set it on a path. When you're dropping something from the roof, or whether the animal, you know, in any case of Grummy, it kind of just happens, but not with a direct intention of you to make it happen. Whereas when you said that when you're programming the robot.
But I don't think that's true, that it's not with your direct intention. If it's not with your direct intention, then there's more reason to be leaving. But with Grummy, even if it was with your intention, even if you did it on purpose that way, you caused it to happen just indirectly with a time delay or something like that, you're still going to be chayav. They used to have the, you know, a Rube Goldberg machine, right? So you set up a machine that this, you know, you've seen with dominoes, domino rally, you know, you with these dominoes knock over this, and then it knocks over that, and then it causes this, and it presses that button, it does this, and then that's Grummy. That's all Grummy. So what happens if you set up that whole machine, and then in the end, you know, it swings a bat at a car? You're putter, even though you set up the whole machine to do that. Because it's too indirect to be considered your action. Even though you did it on purpose. Now, what I was more interested though is the Rama.
It's really counterintuitive.
Keep in mind, it doesn't mean it's mutter. That's not what it means. What we're talking about is liability, and how liability occurs. That's what we're talking about. So we're not talking about whether it's right or wrong. Of course we're not. It's wrong, and in fact, it's wrong in the eyes of Hashem. And you're chayav b'dinei shamayim. Grandma, you're chayav b'dinei shamayim. You should pay the guy back. The only question over here, like in many cases, is whether or not the court can hold you responsible. And in a Jewish court, it takes a lot. The Rama says, actually, no, the case where you pull away the mattresses, you're going to be putter, because it's Grama. The Shulchan Aruch seems to think it's direct, but the Rama says it's not. Okay, let me skip around. Let me find the part that I wanted to find. Where is it? Here. If you look, there's a little kaf dalet. About halfway through the Rama. It says, Yesh omrim, the v'kol grama benezikin, im hu davar shchiach v'ragil, chayav l'shalem, mishum knas. What's that? That's what the Shach was quoting, B'Shem HaRitzbah.
Yes.
One of the Rishonim, the Ritzbah. Says, if it's a grama, but it's the kind of grama that becomes commonplace, that people just do this, either because they find that, you know, this is convenient, or because they're just careless. And they don't care. They say, you know, everybody's doing this, and because it's grama, we're not going to be held liable. So the rabbis will get up, and they'll say, no, enough, adkan. You can't keep doing this. So he gives an example. Yesh mi shekatav de Reuven shemachar mechak la'akum uba Shimon v'amalei la'akum she'enu shava kokach chayav l'shalem lo. I think the case is where you it sounds like the case is where Reuven sold the car to a non-Jew, and then Shimon came to the non-Jew and said, you know, that car wasn't worth as much as he said it, or he says, you know, there's something wrong with the car. And I guess the non-Jew goes back. I'm not sure if this is the case. The non-Jew goes back to Reuven and you know, demands his money back. So now Shimon is chayev. Even though Shimon, he didn't do anything, but he caused the loss. So apparently that was commonplace. And so the Chazal made a knas that you're going to be chayev for that. Okay, fine. Now, what's interesting is the Rama is making up a case over here. That's not a case you find in the Gemara, which is why the Shach, the very next thing, he says, you know, I agree with the Rama, but I think he went too far. Because the Rama was willing to make up new cases. And the Shach says, we don't do that. Shach says, Dina de Garme, I explained to you what it is, however, it's a closed book. Whatever cases of Dina de Garme you find in the Gemara, those are called Dina de Garme, but we do not expand. You know, you might have expected that, okay, any case where we find that a grama is being abused, we should make an enactment and say, that's now garmi, and therefore you're going to be chayav. And that seems to be what the Rama says. The Shach says, no, we don't make up new ones. So now we get back to our robot case. If we assume that the robot is Grama, so it would appear that according to the Rama, like that, it would be considered Garmi, right? And there would be a Knas.
Because it's a new case.
But the Shach would seems to say, no, we don't make up new cases. We don't make up new cases of Garmi, and therefore, we're out of luck. Now, it's still the case that there is still such a thing as Dina de Malchuta, by the way. Yeah. Of course, if a government decides that they're going to prosecute certain cases, and that's the law, then that's the law. But we're just talking about, right now we're just talking about pure Dina Mamanot, pure Choshen Mishpat. So we see that things are not actually so clear from the perspective of causation, the perspective of liability, that you're going to be chayav, even if you program that robot to do such a thing. And certainly if you indirectly programmed it. Not clear at all. But now finally we get to Jake's point. And Jake's point was one of property. Right? It's my robot caused damage. Forget about whether or not I caused the robot to do it. Forget about whether or not I'm responsible, so to speak, from a, from an ethical perspective. My robot caused damage. It's my property.
Same as my cow doing the damage.
So there's almost no dispute. Of course it is. My robot caused damage. Of course I'm going to be chayav. But now let's take a step back and return to one of our original cases. What about with a car? Okay? So now, let's go to the case where I'm riding in my autonomous vehicle, and all of a sudden, let's say there was a glitch, and the car swerved to the right when it really was supposed to swerve to the left, and it caused damage or Chas v'Shalom killed somebody. Who is liable for that, if anybody? It's my car. Who's liable? So on the one hand, we want to say it's no different from shore. But if my shore goes out and does something, I didn't tell it to do it. I didn't control it. It went and it did it. This car was a glitch, but it's still my car. My car caused damage.
But a shore has a habit of trampling.
Oh.
Darkon lelech lehazik, I think is a term in the Gemara, something like that.
Yes. But we have such a thing as a short tam and a short muad, and right. Even a short tam is chayef.
Yes.
You're not going to be patur just because your shore has never done it before. Right? Very good. So let's take the short. So let's do this in the shortest way. I heard from somebody. It's not written anywhere, but apparently there's going to be an entire book written by the Talmidim of Rav Asher Weiss about this topic, about the governance of autonomous vehicles. Apparently they're coming out with a book over the next couple of years. They wrote a whole sefer on the halacha of this. But I heard from someone who said that he asked Rav Asher Weiss this, and Rav Asher Weiss said that it seems to him that by the time these cars become available, they will be so reliable that there is no reason for anybody to expect that there will be any kinds of mistake in a normal case by these cars.
It'll be effectively the same as you driving it.
Better. Much better.
Unlike your
perspective.
No, much better than me driving it from a safety perspective. Much better than me driving. Human drivers make mistakes all the time.
Right, but the difference is that when I'm driving, I'm responsible. When you're saying it's better, it's no longer me responsible, it's now the manufacturer.
What I mean to say is that you're not going to have cases where the car... You don't expect to have cases where the car makes mistakes.
Right, but in that case, if it's better, then it's no longer me driving,
right.
It's the
manufacturer. Right, and the key point over there is that Rav Asher Weiss inserts what Jake just said, which is that I have... let's say we compare it to the shore. It's true that the shore has never gored before, right? But on the other hand, if I'm walking with the shore and there's a lot of noise going on, right? There's a lot of noise or something that excites the shore, and I should have grabbed the shore and I don't know what you do with the shore, but I don't know what you're supposed to do with it, but I should have taken him out of the situation, and I didn't, right? Then I'm responsible for that because I should have done better shmirah. even if it's a short time, even if it's never done anything before, I'm liable because there is a certain degree of negligence. But with a car like this, I'm driving, there's no way I'm going to expect that it's going to swerve. There's no way I should be expected to have understood that that was going to happen. So Rav Eshel says he thinks that the driver is not going to be technically liable. Not liable at all. Even if there's a death, he's not going to be liable at all. However, apparently he said, well, what's going to happen? It's not going to never happen. It's going to happen. There's going to be glitches. There's going to be mistakes. Accidents are going to happen. If we have a situation where the driver's not liable, and let's assume for now that the company's not liable, although I don't know why he assumed that. That seemed to be the assumption. It seems to me that actually, probably legally, what's going to happen is that the companies are probably going to have to take some responsibility for these situations, or at least the insurance companies. But let's assume that the only one that we're interested in is the driver. He says, Mishum tikkun olam, I think we should hold the driver liable, which is a wild thing for him to say. In other words, he thinks that technically speaking, the driver is not going to be liable, but what are you going to have? You're going to have Hefkervelt, where nobody's going to pay for any damages anymore. Inevitably, there are going to be some damages, there are going to be some mistakes that the cars are going to do, but nobody's going to pay for them. It can't be. Let's hold the drivers responsible, not because they really are, but because you have to hold somebody responsible. Now, I think in reality, my guess is what's going to happen is that the company is going to be responsible. I'm sure they're going to have lawyers. They're going to fight it every second, every step of the way. Or maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just, I don't know. It's kind of there's probably a tug of war between PR and also wanting to make sure that they don't look like they're, they don't care.
Filing a lawsuit that sued both the driver and the company.
You're American. Maybe.
But even if it was proven that it was a glitch, what if it was proven that it was a glitch? The driver didn't do anything.
Comes that way.
What?
Uber car killed.
An Uber car with the driver. I mean, it's a regular driver.
But was it an electric car going by himself?
Yeah. Imagine having the Teslas already have this. There's a guy who would like to demonstrate this. Teslas already have a summon feature, where if you're close, I think you have to be close enough. I don't think you can do this over a long distance. But if you're close enough, let's say you're in a parking lot, you press a button, and your car, it is a Tesla. The car pulls out by itself and drives to you. Drives all the way to you. So what happens if something happens there? You're not even in the car. You couldn't possibly do anything.
But you're controlling the car.
But Tesla arranged this. Tesla wrote the program. They're the ones who did it. So how could I possibly be liable? So I think that the companies are going to be, legally speaking, I think the companies are going to take responsibility for this, legally speaking, and they'll fight it every step of the way, and it'll be a question of whether or not they would rather be seen as having made a mistake or as being soulless and not caring about the damage that the car is doing. It'll be a tug of war.
The company was responsible for that. Then they saw by the camera that this one was just running in the middle of the street crazy.
Right, so they're, good. Also an important thing. There's an important factor over here of, accidents sometimes happen, but it's really the pedestrian's fault. If a pedestrian runs in front of a car, I've never had this happen, but, if a pedestrian runs in front of a car that's driving and the car hits it, I assume that if it's not the driver's fault at all, he's not going to be liable, mm-hmm. even though he's driving the car, I assume. Yeah. Right? So you have the same situation with many cars. There was an article, though, that was published where Google actually took responsibility for a certain case where the car made a mistake. The case was where some objects fell off of a truck that was driving in front of the car, and they started to roll towards the Google car. And so the Google car swerved and hit a bus. Now, the car shouldn't have swerved, at least not to hit a bus, because the worst thing that would have happened is that it would have hit some objects. That's it. These aren't people. So it had no right. It shouldn't have swerved to hit the bus. Now, what would have human done in that situation? Probably also swerved. But the point is that the car shouldn't have done that. And Google took responsibility. They said, we're going to reprogram the car to make sure that it doesn't happen again, because it should have just hit the objects. There was no doubt, no humans would have been injured if it would have hit the objects.
That comes back to the beginning of your first question about if you choose to.
Yeah.
The car choose
to it goes back to making these kinds of decisions. How do you make these decisions? How does halacha make these decisions?
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a world away from Shoshanaga.
Right. Okay. That's. pretty much what I wanted to teach. There's obviously, you know, we only touched the tip of the iceberg, and there's so many different holes over here. But I just wanted to give a taste of what kinds of issues these, even these issues of, like I said, Rav Asher Weiss's Talmidim, they're going to come out with an entire book on how they make these decisions. And I actually have seen
based
some.
Rav Asher Weiss's Shiurim.
He has a whole Beis Din. He has a whole Beit Torah where they study these things. I found some sources. What?
I haven't been there to see it, but apparently.
Yeah. Everybody wants to come on Wednesday nights. I plan on trying to go soon. Debate about whether I'm going this week, but I hope to go to Bnei Brak. Rav Asher Weiss speaks every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. It's 15 minutes from here. No, in Hebrew. Although he does speak perfect English. He's from Borough Park.
But this week we've got about Kim Chi, so it'll be there.
He speaks about. He has a parsha share that he gives every week. As far as I know, it's only for men, but I have no idea actually. It's in Bnei Brak. And actually, he does it in Yerushalayim, and he does it in Bnei Brak. The one in Yerushalayim is attended by a lot of people. Ironically, the one in Bnei Brak, I actually stopped by once. It's actually quite a small room. You can actually get to know him. Like, you could probably talk to him afterwards. I saw, it looked like there were probably like 40 people, something like that.
I was once
I really don't know why I haven't gone.
I was once at a